Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
All right, here we go. Football 52 with UNC head football coach Ed Lamb. I am Brady Hull. Coach, my friend, interesting game last week against Eastern Washington. It felt like, just from my perspective watching the game, especially early on, you know, I'm thinking this Bears team is you guys looked better at times against this Eastern Washington team. I guess the tail of the tape, there's a lot more to go into it, but interceptions, turnovers on down, had a few of those go on in this game, and it's hard to win football games, especially when you're really searching out that win to kind of break that streak. When you're turning the football over.
No doubt. Sometimes it can sound like, you know, when a coach says, we just turned the ball over too many times, it's almost like the coach is making it sound like it was just chance, you know, and they do happen for a reason. I guess it's like a basketball coach, like, well, we just got to make shots, you miss shots for a reason, right? And any good basketball coach is going to dig into those reasons. So, the same thing should happen in football. Turnovers are, just critical to win that turnover battle. And between interceptions and turnover on downs, we turned the ball over 8 or 9 times, 5 interceptions, and I think it was 4 turnovers on downs. So really a tough day that way. Defensively, we didn't start out all that well, particularly like in the second quarter. That was a tough second quarter for us. And so it put us in position where I think the whole team was feeling like we need to press a little bit on offense. And that's when more of the – obviously we're going for it a little more on fourth down. I will follow fairly closely the analytics of when to go for it on fourth down, particularly if we're down a couple of scores, because there's only so many possessions in a game and you can't keep punting the ball to the opponent. And so that puts us in a more difficult position. You know, if I go for it on a 4th and 5, that's a 50% proposition at 4th and 5, just based on a national average. So, yeah, it was a really, from that perspective, a difficult day, because we had all, just had that as a game that could be a winnable game, could be two teams that are fairly evenly matched, that are just a few plays or a few games away from being in the playoff hunt. And, came out of there with a pretty sound beating, and it was difficult.
Well, and those first two drives, I mean, you're driving down. I think it was like an 8 or 9 play drive, and then you get to the turnover on downs, and then you hold them. Didn't you? I believe you held them to a field goal, and then you get the ball back, another long drive, and then an interception. That right there, it's like you are outmatching them. You're beating them in these contests, in these battles early on, but that great equalizer at the end of a drive, if you turn over on downs or an interception, and in this case, twice in a row on those possessions, that can be tough. That can be tough to overcome, even in a tight game like this, which you still found a way to get the lead. At one point, you're up 7-3. Still hard to overcome when you're seeing it. Hey, we're putting these drives together, but they're ending prematurely with a turnover or two.
Yeah, Cam Chapp, I got the interception that led to our first touchdown, and yeah, able to build a little bit of a lead there and some momentum in the first quarter, and lost it. Their offense did begin to move the ball toward the end of the first quarter and through the second quarter, and there were times when we weren't slowing them down. One of our real strengths in pass defense has been our ability to match up man to man, and we got beat twice there at the end of the first and in the second quarter in bracket coverage. You know, we got a double team on, and so that those are a backbreaker, because if you're double teaming somebody, it means you're weak somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And so you're kind of praying that the quarterback is trying to throw it to the bracketed guy or the bracketed guys. So that was really costly for us, and kind of puts the sideline in a tailspin too, because it's again, you can kind of use a basketball analogy. You're double teaming a guy and he scores anyway. It's like, it can be a kind of a shot to the confidence for the whole unit over there as they're watching that, especially now when we have the iPads on the sidelines and we go over and we make correction, watch what's going on. It's like it was a test there of our character to stay together through those moments.
Ultimately, a lost Eastern Washington, coach, 27-7. It's interesting. I was talking to Coach Smiley about this yesterday, and this is how it is when you're watching football, college football. I mean, at the beginning of the season, everyone's excited. You know, everyone's 0-0. You have everything out in front of you. Football is that sport where as you progress through the season and it starts to go south for you in the win-loss column, you know, fans kind of maybe they mentally check out, they move on to whatever. Basketball is the opposite of that, especially in the Big Sky Conference, because no matter what, whether the Bears go 25-0 or they go 0-25, there is still that nugget of the Big Sky Conference tournament there of, okay, maybe a guy got hurt and he's going to get healthy at some point. Or you're losing games by really close. You're just not figuring out how to win. Maybe the hope is that you can still figure that out once you get to the tournament. With football, it's just so tough because as you progress, you have certain benchmarks. You and I have talked about that, of goals and amount of wins, get to the playoffs, whatever. And then when you see some of those goals start to falter, they slip through your fingers. It can. I from an outsider's perspective, you wonder, okay, what is the focus like? I'm never one of those guys that say, oh, the team's quitting because there's two games left or whatever. But I actually go the opposite. Do they start pressing so much where it's like, there's two games remaining. I've got to go. I've got to show out so that I can better my position for next year, transfer portal stuff, whatever, just to make a mark on this team. I always kind of view it as the opposite on that. And then as you wind down the season and you get to the point where, okay, we got one or two games left, and in this case, one game left, do you sense guys just kind of feeling that desperation of I have to do something, not just for the team, but also for myself to try to separate myself a bit?
100%. And when that's happening, it can certainly be an indictment of the head coach especially, because that's a mindset thing. You know, that's a team culture thing, and the best coaches are able to overcome those disappointments. We've had it's been a particular mental challenge for this team this year, because I think at times we showed how much progress has been made, you know, as a program and what could be possible. And maybe we are that, you know, overall, I don't really know what the computer rankings would be for us, but my guess is that we would be a top half of the country team, right? Which should put you in the, if you can get hot, you can make a playoff run. You can be a winning football program. And we've been really close to that, but that makes it even harder when those wins don't happen and those close losses start to add up and everybody's saying, geez, if we'd have got these three or whatever, that we have this such a record and we're not there. So I do think that occurs. I know it occurred a lot last year. I think it occurred in this last game where we were pressing. Having two quarterbacks is really hard on both of the quarterbacks. They're both out there literally competing for their job in real time. But as I said many times last week, and I said to those quarterbacks and even the team, you can't unscramble an egg. Mm-hmm. Peter Castelli has done some really good things and is recognized by his teammates as being a talented, capable quarterback. So has Eric Gibson. Well, when Peter came back and was healthy and were not winning or playing particularly well at quarterback, then, you know, they both deserved an opportunity to play. This week going forward, there's a little bit of a, you know, I think we have a clear direction at this point. You know, Eric is neither quarterback has really shined, and there's something to be said for their teammates around him and coaches and helping them shine. But also, I think we can take the pressure off of it being a competition. We're going to go in with a clear 1-2, Eric being the 1 and Peter being the 2 this week. And I think that should help really both of them, although obviously, you know, Peter's going to be disappointed in that decision, and I know why. He's very capable.
It's very tough because, you know, you go to in the beginning of the season, in the off season, it's clear. It's Peter Castelli. He's the right quarterback. He gets hurt. Gibson comes in, has some ups, mainly ups, couple downs, but then just keeps kind of big numbers he's throwing out there. So he's looking good. And at one point, I remember even doing the podcast after Castelli, I'm thinking, oh, Castelli's probably out for the season. And then you come in for the podcast and you're like, no, I'm not ready to say that. And rightfully so, here he is. So that's what's difficult about this, because I've always been the guy that's like, unless the guy just blows you away, Peter Castelli's plan A for a reason. Gibson Jr. was plan B for a reason. So when plan A becomes healthy and plan B kind of falters a bit, it would just seem natural to say, okay, no, we're putting plan A back in there. Maybe not fully starting, whatever, but we're gonna put him in, you know, a few possessions here and again, and just see kind of how that works. The understanding of it to me is a rock and a hard spot, because again, you're hoping it kind of works out. Do you think that that kind of messed with? Because I think some quarterbacks mentally they rise to that challenge. Oh, this guy's back and he's pushing me. I'm going to overcome that. And this isn't a knock on anybody. I've seen NFL guys. I've seen some of my favorite quarterbacks do this. Jake Plummer, Jay Cutler. Some guys look at that and go, I'm looking over my shoulder.
Yep.
And he's back. Mentally, now I'm not so sure. Every single throw I make, every mistake I make is going to be dissected. And that could be the last play I make. Do you think that that impacted Gibson's game?
100%. I think it impacted both of their games. They're pressing. But again, it was at that point, it was already scrambled. You know, there would be no way that would be completely against my ethics as a, you know, as a former player, what I remembered and was respected about the game. To me, there would be big problems within the team chemistry if we just said, look, we're sticking with Eric, or, hey, Peter's back full, we're going with Peter. They both had played well, and they both had left the door open for the other guy.
Yeah.
And so we have to treat them like we would any other player. What we intend to do with that is to show confidence in both. And I think from a player perspective, particularly if they do start pressing, or if they're not hot in that moment, then it feels like we have confidence in neither.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in this case, the only way through it is through it. We're not going to be able to manufacture anything. I'm not a Jedi. I can't change their mind on the way that they see it.
We always talk about football. It's like coaches are playing chess out there, you know, on the X's and O's, on the field side of it. We don't talk about as much like with the player personnel and what to do, because again, if you come in and say, no, Peter, I know you're coming back. You got back from injury, but no, it's Gibson's job now. That's tough, because you could ruin Peter Castelli for whatever, because I know he's eligible for next year. You could ruin that mentality, whatever, for him, and then he either leaves or just doesn't ever realize that true potential. On the other hand, if you say, hey, Gibson, Peter's back. He was plan A for a reason. He's going to take your job. Well, that might mean the end of Eric Gibson Jr.'s time as a UNC Bear. Mm-hmm. You want both of them. You know, you want both to compete. And so I think you were trying to find the best of both worlds there. How do we kind of let this situation take care of itself on the field? And sometimes the guy says, all right, I'm rising to that challenge. And sometimes the opposite kind of happens and both guys end up pressing. And that's kind of unfortunately what we've seen.
Yes. And the full intention was to let it take care of itself on the field. And for a while it was.
Yeah.
When Eric and the team and the offense was playing pretty hot through the kind of a two-game stretch with Idaho and Sacramento State, you know, Peter and I were having those conversations where, hey, look, we don't have a policy that when you're back, because at that point he was about 2, maybe 3 weeks from coming back. I said, there's no policy that you just get your job back. Every situation is different. I could have that policy, but I'm not going to, right? And every player, you have to judge the player that's returning against the backup that's now the starter, and then make a decision, or at least that's my policy.
Yeah.
And so the one thing I wanted to make sure I did with Peter was communicate with him, and Peter's good about that. So we had several conversations in our office, and Peter's a grown up, and a competitor, so always expressed confidence in himself, and always supported the decision, and supported Eric, you know, publicly. So, you know, in the locker room, et cetera, and always did a great job of that. But when we got on a 3-4 game losing streak, and now Peter's back to full speed and has all these abilities and talents, that's really when the problem started to show up, because there's no way that I'm just going to keep continue to allow us to slide offensively without putting not just the backup quarterback in, but multiple positions. You know, we've rotated our offensive line. We've rotated some new receivers in there. We've pulled some guys deep off of the bench at all positions, running back and other skill positions. So, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, Fisher Clements was in a similar situation. We don't talk about it as much, but Charlie Garrison had been playing really well, and mm-hmm. Fisher's a great tight end. We have such high expectations for Fisher. But when he came back, he had to get into that battle, and there's a lot of times there's only one tight end on the field. And so these aren't easy for the head coach or the position coach or the player especially.
Well, I mean, again, we talk about there's so many positions that you're dealing with this on,
yeah.
But that quarterback position
right.
it's the most important position in all of sports.
They touch the ball every play.
There's a reason why when we're evaluating NBA or basketball, hockey, whatever – It's not always the, well, how many championships has he won? Well, maybe in basketball you tend to do that. In football, you never ask that of Barry Sanders. You never ask about how many championships did that running back have. That doesn't make him the best. It's always about the quarterback, 100%. It's about the quarterback on that side of it. So that's why this position is so well covered, so well talked about. Even though you're dealing with it all season, guys are getting bumped, banged up. They're coming back from injury. Maybe they had a rough game or two, and then they kind of fall back into the depth chart. It's happening all season with all your guys. And the same amount of – maybe not the same amount of stress, but there's certainly stress on every position. But that quarterback, that's the one that – that's what we all see first. That's what fans are watching, is what's going on at the quarterback position.
Sure. I mean, yeah, how many Super Bowls have been won with a backup quarterback?
You know?
And then – but how many have been won with a backup left guard or a backup corner, you know, taking it over for an injured player? It's like it's a major part of the decision-making process. The quarterback makes critical decisions on every play. It's kind of the extension of the game plan runs right through that quarterback like no other position.
Yeah, it's why we – fair or unfair, when you win, it's, oh, Eric Gibson Jr. is – that's maybe the greatest quarterback we've ever seen for the Bears.
Yeah.
When you lose, is Peter Casselli getting healthy? And that's not fair to these guys. They're young dudes, and it's mentally it can be taxing on these guys. But that's also why I really appreciate how you've handled this, because there's a chance in this scenario where you could ruin both. If you say, Peter, you're done, Gibson's the guy, Gibson struggles, then you're asking Peter to come back in. Then there's this mindset of, Coach didn't, you know, want me back in when I got healthy, even though I was plan A. I'm already looking for a different situation next season because I can't truly put my faith into him either. So it is walking that fine balance. It's very crucial.
Yeah, here's the thing about, you know, being a coach and recruiting. Every college football player has got a strong parental upbringing.
Yeah.
You know, as I meet these parents, you know, quarterbacks even more so. And that the idea of, look, compete through tough, difficult circumstances. There are life lessons to be learned in playing this quarterback position. You are in the spotlight. These generally are parents that have, you know, kind of told their son from a young age, you're going to be a quarterback. Here's what being a quarterback means. You're going to be in the spotlight. You got to know how to deal with adversity. And, you know, Eric and Peter's parental guidance coming from home is the same. A lot of support, a lot of involvement, and appropriately so, you know, and it's been like that every, you know, there are a lot more variables with other positions and upbringings and the way their parents talk about sports and things like that. But the quarterback position, I think requires some mental training in the home from a very young age.
I think quarterbacks are just different people. I've always said Division I coaches, you guys are different people. Like there's a different – it's just a different job that you guys are doing and dealing with on a regular basis. But quarterbacks too, because that pressure is so crazy. You know, you take a cornerback or a linebacker and he loses his job. He might be on special teams, and he can go out on special teams and make a play. Suddenly, he's back on the radar. If we need, you know, we start scheming. Peter Castelli's not going to run out on kickoff to try to earn his way back on the back up into the good graces. It's you're waiting for either a quarterback to struggle or get hurt, unfortunately. Yeah. That's what you're doing as a quarterback.
Yeah. It's probably the most difficult thing on those two guys and the coaches is there must be when there's an active competition going on, there must be a little bit of an effort by each guy to play the other's game. So these two guys have different games, different strengths. If we were completely game planning around one quarterback, the game plan looks significantly different. But Eric knows, for example, that you know if Peter comes in and takes off in the scramble or design QB run game, there's a real danger there to the defense. And so Eric is going to want to prove that he can also be dangerous in his own way on the scramble and the design QB run. And as coaches, we have to facilitate that, right? Like you don't want to have a complete different game plan for Peter than you do for Eric. And then Peter's doing the same thing. You know, Eric's thrown for a higher percentage and a higher efficiency than Peter has consistently over time, practicing games or whatever. And so Peter wants to prove that he can do that he can throw accurately and efficiently. And so they're both playing a little bit off their game.
Yeah.
And we understand that going in, but again, we can't unscramble that egg. Like, what do you do? I'm not going to flip a coin. And I'm not going to put our quarterbacks in a position that the rest of the team is not in and just say we're going with this guy for some arbitrary reason. Every guy on the team is responsible to make plays to help the team win and play to their highest potential in order to stay on the field. And it's critically important that the quarterbacks do that as well. The time for the coach to make a more arbitrary decision and stand by it is the offseason, and we did that. We knew we had two very good ones or more. And we said Peter's our number one, Eric's our number two, and we went into the season that way. And I look forward to the chance to do that again in the off season. But this week we've done that. Eric's our number one, and Peter's our number two.
And you mentioned that too. You have one more game left. You got Portland State at home this weekend. How did that conversation go? If we can talk about it with Peter Cassell, and again, we don't have to. Those are deep conversations that sometimes aren't meant for the podcast world either. Yeah. So I have to ask, and if you want to say, "Hey, no, we'll keep that one close to the chest."
Yeah, I think it's Peter has handled it the exact way he did when he first came back and was available. It's like, "Hey, coach, am I going in? Well, here's the role, and Eric remains the starter, and let's give you some time, see how things are working in practice. You will get some time in games." And he never flinched, and he never will. That's a strong personality. Quarterbacks have to be. And again, I know the parents. I know what they stand for. I know what kind of messages they're getting from home. They may not agree with the coach's decision. Peter may not agree with the coach's decision. Doesn't. I can say that. He does not.
Yeah.
But whether he's for the team and going to prepare himself for the moment that he may get – 100%. I have 100% confidence in his ability to do that. And we have a job to do to help him shine if and when that moment occurs.
Coach, both guys, Eric Gibson Jr. and Peter Costello, both guys do have a year of eligibility next year, right? Gibson too?
Yeah, Gibson's had a little bit of a strange start to his career where LSU had invited him, put him on their tracking list. There's a documented record of all of it. And then at the last moment didn't give him an opportunity to be on the team or even try out for the team in the fall semester. So there's some grounds there where, I think LSU maybe had a breach of decorum because you don't put a guy on the tracker, encourage him to come enroll full time, start his clock, and then not give him an opportunity. And so we're going to have to, appeal to the NCAA for that. But LSU has been very forthcoming on that and indicated that there were conversations and there was encouragement and that they may have done the wrong thing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So at this point, would you say looks pretty positive that he would have?
I cannot imagine the NCAA not giving him that year. I mean, it's like as a coach, I would never do what my understanding of what LSU did to Eric. I would never allow one of my coaches to, tell a kid, hey, we got a spot for you. Come here,
but you didn't, and then, hey, you know what? Sorry, we
don't have a spot.
Wow.
You don't do that. It does happen, and it will be up to the NCAA. But I think there's a very strong case, and like I said, LSU has been for all that they're going through right now on an administrative level, they stepped up big time. and dug into their records and verified Eric's story. So
wow,
yeah, that they did not have to do that.
Yeah,
they could have hidden it. They could have said we're too busy. We're firing and hiring coaches yeah. right now. We're $53 million into a buyout mm-hmm. negotiation.
Yeah, no, that's a great point.
Yeah, they stepped up in a huge way. Just so much respect for current LSU administration on that.
When would you get a final, like, it sounds positive right now, but when would you get like the, yeah, guaranteed he's got one more year left?
It's not something that I control. You're like at the deli, you know what I mean? You take a number and you wait. So yeah. we will file it. we have filed it. And I would hope to find out before the portal opens, in January. I mean, that's when I think the NCAA needs to step forward on a lot of these decisions, because we need to find out, are we getting a portal guy? Peter Castelli needs to know, what's the whole picture he's looking at? Is he the only returning starter at quarterback, or is it him and Eric again? And so all those, I think the NCAA, it's incumbent on them to make a timely decision for everybody involved, including potential guys that we would add in recruiting.
Well, let's assume that Eric's coming back next year. This game against Portland State, how much, and I know that's the focus, how much does this game matter for the future, for the foreseeable future, like next season? Is Eric Gibson pretty much playing for, if you guys go out, beat Portland State, and he has a good game? I know the offseason has to take place, but does that really put him in the driver's seat for being the guy next year? And then you begin that plan in the offseason of, okay, we know he's going to be the guy. We change our offense because he's not the runner that Castelli is. So now we've got plenty of time to figure out, match all the pieces around him. So how is this game kind of like a mini audition for him this weekend?
Yeah, I'd say mini is a good word, right? Like how do we win the game? If we win the game 7-3 and he doesn't play particularly well, huge moment for the program, which I want to talk about a little bit.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, what's on the line here? I mean, this is – our whole team is very well aware that 4 wins – on a season would be the most in 9 years. Like, that's something for our outgoing senior class to be proud of.
Absolutely.
When I took this job over, I didn't cut – you may remember, I didn't cut anybody. And on senior day 3 years ago in my first year, we had 4 seniors. Mm. I've never even heard of something like that. Most teams have minimally 20, and then championship teams are having 27, 28, almost 30 seniors. They have that type of retention, belief, buy-in over a long period of time. So in year 2, we had 9, and this year we have 19 seniors being recognized.
That's fantastic.
In every way, if we can get this win, in a bottom-line business, the bottom line is trending in the right direction.
Yeah.
A loss would be just as devastating in the other direction. There's such a difference between 3 and 4 wins from a trajectory standpoint. Certainly a case could be made, okay, well, the program is improving in the time that me and my staff and these players have been here. We went from 0 win to 1 win to 3 wins. But those that's just comparing it to ourselves. And to see an overall program trend in the right direction would be a huge moment for, not just Eric, but every guy on this team, including the outgoing seniors.
We've talked about like your goals, and we know that 4 wins isn't where you want to be.
Right.
Like, we know what your dream is for this team. But the bottom line is we just haven't seen a lot of success with the Bears over the years. So getting to that 4-win mark is substantial. It's not whatever, we'll take that secondary prize. This would be substantial for this team, especially considering, because we'll do this, I'm sure, in a couple weeks, where not only do we assess the future, or we look at the future, but we look at the season. It could be a 4-win season, and a season where you had a lot of games against really good teams where it came right down to the wire. And I know that's tough to like, oh, but we still lost. But if you take the 4 wins plus what this season meant through 80%+ of it, that's a real building block. And I'm not saying that because you're sitting across from me. That's a legitimate thing where you walk away from this and say, you absolutely take a positive from this season.
I think so. Yeah, I know so. That's how we would feel about it. This game means everything to us this week. It's a it's a way to send the seniors out right. That's probably, you know, number one on my mind when I think of it from an individual player standpoint. It's a way to build some significant momentum into a really critical season of retention. The first thing now for all college football programs is retention. 10 years ago, we would not talk about retention as number one. If a guy wanted to leave, you know, it meant they were going to drop down a level. It was usually the right decision for a guy. He wasn't playing as much as he wanted to, and it's time to, you know, drop down and see if you can get more playing time at a different level. Now there's guys going up. There's guys going sideways. There's guys within the conference. I mean, Montana's best receiver was at Eastern Washington the year before. They just plucked him out of the portal and paid him more money than Eastern Washington could. Mm-hmm. It is bizarre with, you know, what's going on from a comparison standpoint. From my chair, it's exciting. I get a chance to go now, and we don't have, you know, a great amount of NIL opportunities or revenue share opportunities. But what we do have is the ability now to manipulate scholarships. We can what's called over award. We can give a guy 2 scholarships or 10 scholarships, and that, you know, at some point there, that gets, you know, that you're not being very intelligent when you're giving 2 or 3 guys 10 scholarships, and then the rest of the team is splitting 10 scholarships between them.
Right.
But I can do that, and I can manipulate it as a kind of a salary pool or a salary cap general manager would in the NFL. Yeah, you can pay one player, you know, half your salary cap, but it's going to hurt the rest of your team.
When you say, like, hey, I can give them multiple scholarships, what does that mean, Coach? Like,
sure.
Just for a random person that's listening, what does that mean, like, money-wise for a player? Because you hear, like, a scholarship, you only need one scholarship to get through the whole thing.
Right.
But what does that mean in the football world?
A scholarship is, in Division I football, a scholarship is 5 components. It's tuition, books, room, board, and fees. And so when we talk about a full scholarship, it's covering those hard material costs of the equivalent of a dorm room, whether that is actually getting them a dorm or giving them the cash equivalent of living in the dorms. So you've got, you got room and board. So then you got a full meal plan, 3 meals a day, et cetera. And then you've got the full tuition, the books, and then any fees that would be on top of that. That's a full ride scholarship. Mm-hmm. And that's worth about, let's just round it, because out of state and in state is different on the tuition.
Sure.
And but it's out of state guys are, I think, about, you know, total of the 40 something, and then in the in state guy would be I think 38 or something like that. But let's just say it's worth $40,000. So if I give a guy 3 scholarships, okay, now it's $120,000. $40,000 is going to go towards the hard costs, and then the other $80,000 is going to go in your pocket somehow. And so that's how we can manipulate this going forward.
Gotcha.
You know, as you can imagine, if you know, I won't go too far into it, but there are a lot of schools in our conference that have the ability to, you know, not really start dividing up scholarships. They just have a cash pool of revenue on hand that is greater than, you know, what we can do, even starting to manipulate these numbers. But that's the cool part about the UNC job to me, right?
Yeah.
Like, we're talking about a win this week puts us on a track where we haven't been in 9 years as a program. Any other school in this conference that has a season that's better than the past 9 years, I mean, they're rolling. They're mm-hmm. rocking, right?
Yeah.
And so if we can just kind of stay on this trajectory, can we be a light for the rest of this university who, by the way, there's nobody – there are no deans – at UNC, that are running the wealthiest program amongst their peers in these regional comprehensive university categories around here, right? Everybody's dealing with budgetary shortfalls. Our university as a whole has had some real struggles. We've had to make some real right-sizing corrections. President Feinstein has had to make some really difficult decisions here over the last couple of weeks and months. If football can do it, it sends a little bit of a signal to everybody else that, like, look, I mean, because I hope that people understand that we're not over here, you know, by competing outside the UNC way. We have some of the biggest budgetary challenges in our conference, as do the other sports. And I think that's why you have such a close department in athletics. Is I think it could go either way, where coaches are kind of like siloed and trying to, you know, root for the other guys. Losses so that they can establish their program as the one that is the light. I think the leadership of Coach Oates, obviously Darren, but Lindsay Oates and what she does with the head coaches and a guy that's been around for so long and been successful, like Steve Smiley, they really show the way, which is, hey, we're all pulling for each other. We're all rowing the same boat here, and a rising tide raises all ships.
Yeah, 100%. You know, just in my conversations with Smiley, he's very much plugged in to everything. Even when he can't be there for games, like he'll be out on the road for a three game tournament this weekend, he's constantly checking in, wants to see what's going on with his football team. You mentioned the nature of this beast too, like trying to find guys, keep guys. I another fascinating thing that I'm seeing is with Big Sky coaches, and you and I've had these conversations. The better they do, the more looks they're going to get. You look at Jason Eck from Idaho. Go look at his, like, when I'm looking at his roster, it's not just Idaho dudes.
Yeah.
They're Big Sky dudes.
Right.
They're all over the Big Sky. So guys that he went up against, he's noting in his brain, if I ever go anywhere, that's a guy I'm going to go after. That's a guy I'm going to go after. The name that's coming up in a lot of circles now is Coach Vegan out of Montana State. And so I instantly go to, well, as soon as that guy gets a job, he's probably obviously going to look at his guys, but throughout the rest of the conference, guys that played well against him too. So that's another component of this battle of trying to retain guys. You are also getting Big Sky coaches that are getting jobs, and you go with what you know first a lot of times. And if you see a bunch of diamonds in the rough around the conference, you're going to pluck those guys away. So that's another challenge.
Sure. And it's a character check. You know, I don't want to try to hold back anybody that's just needs a new experience, needs a new spot, is trying to play in a bigger stadium. Like if you want to stay here and you have the stomach for it, you want to be a legend here, you want to do things that have never been done in this program. That's to me, that's why I'm still here.
Yeah.
That's why I will still be here next year, no matter what opportunities come along. Because that to me, in spite of all the hardship, that's the dream I'm chasing.
Yeah.
And I'm 100% in on it. And we have a bunch of players that will do that as well. But one of the things that you mentioned, the dynamics, those coaches, if some of our guys do go in the portal, you know, once they're in, I want to help them. And so if Brent Vegan calls me about one of our guys and says, hey, I see what I see on film, I've made my evaluation, he's in the portal, I want him, what is he like? You know, they're going to get nothing but the truth from me. And, you know, frankly, if a guy's going into the portal, it means he's succeeded here. And anybody who has succeeded here has jumped through all of the hoops we've asked.
Yeah.
We just don't have that kind of guy. Like, we're no respecters of talent. We're not going to put a bum out there because he's really talented. And then he jumps in the portal and the coach calls and I'm like, yeah, he's a bum. Don't take him.
You know, yeah. And you've been so upfront with that from the get-go. Like, yeah, I'm going to help you out and we're going to be positive about this situation. And that's another thing about this season is when you get to the point where there's an obvious four or five guys that people are asking you about, and we don't have to get into that right now, but when there's an obvious four or five guys, that also means there's a turn in what your program is doing.
Right.
Now suddenly it's, I mean, maybe 2 years ago we didn't have a guy that we were talking about. Now it's like you clearly have, there's four or five guys that the random person that's following UNC football a little bit would know they're going to be able to keep that guy, they're going to be able to keep that guy. It is a double-edged sword. It's good and bad to have that. Probably more good though.
It is. In the NCAA, when they you know, allowed us to over award, they gave schools like us a chance because now we can at least make a run at some of those guys that you're talking about and say, hey, don't go to. So there was a study recently. The average Power Four player is only getting about $5,000 extra a year in revenue share.
Mm.
That was really a shock to a lot of people.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's like, you know, if our guys have kind of demonstrated that ability and they just want to go play in front of 50,000 people a week in a bigger stadium, there's nothing I can do. I'm not going to talk them out of that, right? There's pros to staying here. There are amazing life opportunities that arise when you stick it out in a place and you do something special. There's cons to going and playing at a Power Four school. Like, yeah, you have the ability to do that, but so does everybody else around you.
Yeah.
And you could find yourself where you're not playing a major role. And if that's all you want is that shot, I'm not going to try to talk a guy out of it, right? They understand all that. I don't need to go into detail about that stuff. But just 3 years ago, we didn't have any ability to match any of that because there's just not enough NIL and there's no revenue that the university is willing to say, hey, look, go spread this revenue around amongst your football team.
Yeah.
We're just trying to pay bills at this point.
It's fascinating, Coach. I know there's a lot of things that we didn't get to, but this Portland State game, obviously we know it's huge. I know you're jumping on with the Good Morning NoCo crew with Tanner's back in the fold. We're all really excited about it. And you and Brian can go back and forth on that. But, man, we're rooting for you this weekend. There are things I want to talk about. Obviously, big game for Eric Gibson Jr. There's a name that I want to ask you about, and we'll do that maybe in the next podcast, but Caden Reeder, quarterback stuff, Thunder Ridge. We can talk about that maybe next week, assuming we can. I never know the rules anymore.
Yeah, the rules are I can only confirm that we are recruiting him.
Okay.
So it's like,
There's only so much we can go on.
Yeah, I guess as you sit here and to say all of his talents, I could nod my head, I guess. But that's the
blink twice.
Yeah,
blink twice exactly. If he's going to be a Bear.
I think the idea is that, and it's probably a good rule, is that we don't use this kind of a platform as a way to recruit. But I know you follow high school football in the state closely, and
Well, here's how I get tipped off: guys start following me. As if I have any kind of control, and I'm going, hey, thanks for the follow. Who's this guy? Local guy. No, so I'm like, maybe he thinks, I don't know. I've literally had someone reach out and say, hey, coach, they call me coach.
That's
coach,
cool.
You know, hey, here's my tape. And I write back, that's pretty good, man. Yeah, you can work on your second, third progression a little bit more. And I just move. No, I don't actually do that, but that tips me off sometimes.
Well, there is no rule that prohibits you pushing information my way about recruits.
Yeah.
And we're all over the state, so the chances that we wouldn't know about a guy. But to know that there's interest, that I think that's organically, that's something that's meant to happen.
I would be the worst guy in the world because I'm going to get their highlight video and be like, coach, the guy's literally perfect. Every play I've seen of him is perfect.
Right.
He's never had a negative play. So you should go get that guy.
There are a lot of good players, especially in this state, that are under-recruited. And now the transfer portal world has made it that they're even more under-recruited, or they're less recruited than they should be. And I continue to have total confidence in our ability to build this program with the local athletes.
And I love what you're doing, my friend. And I'm wishing you the best of luck because this is a big game. It's a huge game for a lot of reasons. Coming up against Portland State this weekend. So senior day, go send those seniors out the right way, and we'll get right back at it on the podcast next week. I guess we'll be jumping into the off-season mode just like that, as fast as this thing goes, my friend.
Thanks, Brady.
All right, Coach. We'll talk to you soon. Football 52, you can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and 1310kfk.com.
Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
Northern Colorado football is geared up and ready for their next home game. Be a part of the action and help the Bears defend the dip. Join UNC in celebrating Senior Day on November 22nd as the Bears face Portland State. Purchase tickets online by visiting uncbears.com/tickets. Remember, this is Bear Country. Go Bears!